Let's rock and roll. I don't know where that energy came from. Sorry, I'll simmer down a bit.
It was good. It was good. I missed you and your
ridiculous. I started speaking without knowing what I was actually going to say, and then it just kind of came out like that.
And that's what I've missed.
What happened? Yeah.
Hi, friends.
Hello, puppets.
Howdy, y'all.
And welcome to Muppet Sex and Trauma. I'm Sarah Azat, the fat culture critic on YouTube.
I'm Jack Cram, editor / right-hand man for Passion of the Nerd and editor for Chipperish Media.
And I'm Josh Gosden, and I really miss you guys. I really missed y'all. I'm just so glad to be back with y'all.
And that's more than enough, because I miss you all too. It's been ages.
I missed you guys. It's good to be back. Good to be back.
So, yeah, we love all of you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And here we are for Zan's What I Did on My Holidays.
This episode, man. So we just get straight into it.
Dream a Little Dream was written by Rakhni S. O'Bannon under the pseudonym Stephen Ray, and directed by Ian Watson. O'Bannon is the show creator, and we've seen a number of episodes from him. We've also seen a number of episodes directed by Ian Watson, including the notorious Jeremiah Crichton. John and Zahn are trapped in a defunct transport pod until Moya returns. While they wait, Zahn tells John about the source of her nightmares. Some time ago, when the crew was separated after blowing up Scorpius's base, Zahn, Rigel, and Chiana are looking for Aaron, John, and Dargo. And one of the places they look is the planet Litigara. It is your standard sci-fi monoculture planet of the week. Oops, all lawyers edition. This is a bad place to get caught jaywalking. So of course, Zahn does. Good news. Her lawyer tells her she'll only have to do 10 days. But any days are too many, as Moya is anxious to get on with the search and look for Tallinn. Just then, a not-at-all-suspicious random stalker lady offers to spring Zahn from the slammer, with a whole melty bar and a map of the joint. This is bound to go well. Oh, and what's this? A dead body in her way and a swarm of cops waiting to pounce. Whoever could have thunk it? I am shocked. I tell you, shocked. Time to go see the magistrate with her big old magistrate hat that is the most magistrated hat of all hats that ever had it. And wouldn't you know, they're all in a little bit of a rush to judgment since the execution is already scheduled. And Zahn can't plead innocent unless someone on this entire planet of almost all lawyers will take the case. Somebody? Anybody? Well, it's up to Rigel and Chiana. They can step up and play lawyer. There's just one little problem. If they lie, they die. And so it's Law and Order Uncharted Territories Division. Starring the Hynerian answer to Perry Mason and Gray Miss Marple. While they attempt to make an investigation, aided by the one person in this story who is not a lawyer, the bartender, Zahn sinks deeper and deeper into herself, hallucinating John, Aaron, and Dargo as she goes. Inept as they are, Chiana and Rigel's desperate defense does make a dent in the entire lack of evidence of Zahn's guilt. And that causes enough trouble for suspicious stalker lady to nab Chiana for a wee little chat with the senior partner of Planet Lawyer. The finest mind the legal profession has to offer on this planet incriminates himself on an open comm channel to Pilot and then lets Chiana go for some reason. Pilot is now on board with the legal team of Sparky and Pip, and they put on a little bit of pageantry with a bit of trickery with a burning torch to push Mr. Brilliant Legal Mind into confessing in open court. And it makes just about as much sense as anything else on this planet, so Fabulous Hat Lady agrees, and everyone is set free, and there we have it. Back in the present, John reassures Zahn that he supports her commitment to her spiritual seek, whatever anyone else says. As Moya's crew call in to say they'll be along shortly, the two friends share a very nice moment.
It was not at all what I expected. This was an incredibly ambitious episode with a lot of ambitious ideas. And I didn't mind it, but it could have been so much better. I wish it was so much better. But look, a lot of great performances, some good ideas that just, I don't know, they just sort of like fizzled rather than, you know, become fully realized, I guess.
Yeah, this definitely was an episode. Sarah, you and I have talked about this any number of times, both on this podcast and in other locales as well. I don't need a metaphor or an allegory to be subtle in order for me to enjoy it. I grew up on Star Trek. They literally painted two actors, half white and half black, to talk about race relations in the 60s. I don't need subtle, but this was a little much for even me. The planet was named Litigara.
I know, Litigara. I gotta say, I appreciate the pun, though. I really do. I appreciate a good pun.
I had the closed captioning on because I keep it on so that I can make sure that I catch everything everybody says. And mm-hmm. you know, and it said, when I spelled out Litigara, I just rolled my eyes.
Also, like,
gonna have a planet of lawyers. It's on Litigara,
right? And a planet like 90% full of lawyers. That place is fun, I bet. That's a wonderful place to be.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, are you ready for the explanation?
Yes.
Okay, yes, please.
What the fuck happened? Okay, so this is kind of a Frankenstein episode.
Oh, yeah.
So the original idea of, you know, Planet of the Lawyers thing was something that they conceived way back when they were like, before it had even been named Farscape.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They were trying to sell the idea, and they were working on the idea. And this is what they sent, one of the ideas they sent to the Sci-Fi Channel guy to sell him on the idea of the thing they were cooking up with at the time was called Space Chase. And he was like, ah, neat. I like Planet of the Lawyers. Do you have a pilot? So they sent him the pilot, and that's kind of like, so this sort of thing is it's kind of one of those, it's one of those kill your darling moments, because this was kind of a darling that it had been conceived all the way back, and there was no way, they couldn't find a way to fit it into season one. And then they wrote it as the opening for season two, because that's when set it during the time when they're looking for John and Dargo. And I think that would have made Brit Mind the Baby feel less like, wait a minute, it just happened. But it also, like, this does not make sense at the beginning, because it doesn't move that story that we're all interested in. And it asks us to stall
that story. Yeah.
Yeah, and as Claudia Black commented on the episode, it asks us to care for a whole bunch of characters that we're just introduced to, and I don't think it accomplishes it.
That's always a hard sell.
But particularly to do that. Yeah, but particularly to do that at the opening of the season. So they had shot it, and part of the reason that they shot it was because it was they were moving studios, and this worked in the production in that it didn't require them to use the Moya sets that were being deconstructed and reconstructed. Because you notice there's no Moya set.
It's no. Just pilots then. Yeah.
Yeah. So they had it, did it in this interim space. And then they recognized, no, this is not going at the beginning. This doesn't make any sense then. So then they had to sort of whack off bits and make this to make this you know, opening and closing, to have it be Zahn's what I did with my summer holidays. Even though 90% of what she's telling us she isn't present for.
Yeah.
So
that's why the whole
perfect sense. Yeah.
That's why the whole dream aspect feels so unnecessary, and like, why is this here? Like,
yeah.
And they didn't even have the title as Dream, and you know, they're doing the whole nightmare thing. And apparently, it was actually that Ben Browder ad-libbed singing Dream a Little Dream. And they and the director went, I like that. And they went and got licensed to use it. Because it's one of those American songbook titles. And so that's how the episode got its name. So it is a total, like, it's a Frankenstein thing made from killed darlings, which is why it's like interesting ideas that are a complete mess.
I'm down for that, absolutely. And I'll never poo-poo ambitious ideas poorly executed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm really stuck on the idea that this was used to sell the show. Like, I don't get it. I'm sorry.
I think it was somewhat different then, because it was the tone has changed a lot to be more real now.
Yeah.
But it was like, right, it was kind of like the jokey thing about the oops all lawyers planet, and a lot of winking to the camera about the
right
lawyer planet. And that it's a very Star Trek premise, because it's like, it always reminds me of the planet of the handkerchief people.
Yep. I was thinking that the whole time. When she crossed the street, I was like, that's when he falls in the flower bed.
Yes. What was that episode called?
That was called Justice in Star Trek Next Generation Season 1.
Yes. It's the planet of the handkerchief people, because they literally are wearing, it's a very William Werthius at his very relation theory. It's the one little infraction causes, you know, insane thing. And it's always these kinds of things. I think there's obligatory courtroom scenes of complete injustice, which I think is partly maybe because Hollywood writers have to deal with Hollywood lawyers, and they want to write a fucking hate lawyers. Don't be
a lawyer. Speaking of Star Trek too, the lawyer costume was very reminiscent of something I've seen Q wear. I don't know what episode.
Big Hat Lady?
It was like I feel like it was a bit of a ripoff. I don't know.
It's Encounter at Farpoint is when...
And again in All Good Things.
Yes, comes in the judge robe. Yeah. Which is also a fucking fabulous hat. And yes, it was very reminiscent of that, except my costumer's eye couldn't help but notice that the ribbon around the hat was slightly... it was a little bit out of alignment. And I am probably one of the only people who would glom onto something like that, but it was annoying me. But it is a fabulous hat.
Yeah, I mean, I really appreciated, like the effort put into this episode in terms of, you know, the costumes, the set design. There was this like, it wasn't the best CG, but there was this outside shot of like cars whizzing by, and I was like, wow, this is like really like they're stepping it up here. So I appreciated a lot of that. Like, they made that planet feel as real and as alive as they possibly could, I guess. But yeah, for me, see, I thought they were going for like a civil rights To Kill a Mockingbird sort of thing. And when I got that idea, I felt really, really excited, but then they just didn't do anything with it, right? Ends up just feeling like great ideas, but like a really half-assed attempt at expressing that idea. And in the end, it didn't really say anything, especially because in the end they get out of it by bullshitting the courtroom, essentially.
There were several very interesting ideas that were set up. First of all, let me just say also, before I get into nitpicking, let me just say that the performances within this episode were outstanding.
Virginia Hay, oh my god, yeah.
Virginia Hay was killing it. Gigi Edgley was killing it. They actually let Rigel's voice actor act. Like, it was just her hallucinations of John, Aaron, and Dargo, like, especially like sweet, gentle, affirming, reassuring Dargo, who was just like looking you right in the eye, and he was just like, you know what?
Oh god,
I believe in you. I believe in you. I was like about to hug my TV and be like, I believe in me too now. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me wish we could have had more of it, somehow we could have had Dargo and Zahn still as a thing, because I also like Chiana and Dargo as a thing.
That's the thing. They kissed, didn't they? They kissed. And so it's like
in her hallucination.
Once again, the show just doesn't know what it wants to do. Like,
it wants to tease you.
It wants a big poly pile on the.
Yeah, like,
and it and we can't do that because it's 2000.
So yeah, all these really great performances are just sort of swimming around in this like mulligan stew of a plot.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly what you're saying, Jack. Like they set up several really great ideas that just didn't, that just went over, like Bonnie and Clyde over a cliff, Thelma and Louise over a cliff, you know? It was,
yeah.
Yeah, there's a good mystery story happening off stage, which is kind of,
yeah. There's an excellent civil rights allegory happening off stage.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
There's, I mean, and Chiana even calls it. She was like, there's Chiana and Rigel being forced to use other strengths.
Mm-hmm.
And then they don't have to because they wind up tricking everybody anyway. There's There's Zahn being forced to deal with her guilt and her like death wishy suicide way of thinking about it. And then she doesn't have to worry about it. Hmm. It never gets resolved.
And there's no tension because this is entirely a flashback.
Yeah.
It has no relevance to the present. She's already given up the Seek by the time we get to this. So it's like, this is why I took up the thing that I abandoned. And it's there's no stakes. Like, this is the definition of no stakes.
Yeah. And I really don't like the let me tell you a story flashback approach. I would much rather do memories or archives or intercuts or whatever like that, rather than, well, it's like it was like an episode of Full House. Like he was, you know, Bob Saget and just sat down and was like, well, kids, I guess it's finally time for me to tell you how I almost got hung at a jury trial or whatever. It was just terrible.
There are times when I like the tell me a story approach, mm-hmm. but you have to use it to something interesting. Like if it had been like more subjectively from Zahn's point of view, that could have been interesting.
A little more Rashomon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just feel like the episode could have been done in sort of real time. The whole flashback dream stuff was pointless. It didn't really serve a purpose, I don't think.
Well, they had already filmed that.
Oh, okay. So they needed to use it, right?
Yeah, they filmed it before they made the decision. So this is the cage thing.
Yeah, but they still could have intercut. Like they filmed a framing device around it is what's driving me nuts.
Yeah,
they could have used it better. Is what I'm trying to say.
Because there is no current plot that is doing anything apart from
not at all.
Like it's resolved in the cold open. We have the one problem in the current time, which is what's making the ship not work. And then we discover it's Kiva barbecue and it's unfixable. And so, you know, we just roll our eyes at Rigel and wait. Which is just like, no stakes.
That's really what the whole episode was. The whole episode was just waiting.
Yeah.
But
this is the point of the season when we shall stop.
But for me, it's just like we get to the end and after the episode, I sat there for a while and I'm like, wait, so what was the dream trying to say? Was it like a manifestation of guilt? And then knowing what I know now, I'm like, oh, it didn't mean anything. It was just there.
Well, it's because she was having a nightmare. She was dreaming about him.
Yeah, but why? Like this?
Yes,
It had nothing to do with what happened.
And telling the story doesn't resolve it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
As far as we know. So yeah, that is all the connecting tissue that there is. It is just that there is none.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like the episode could have worked as a season premiere if they had the guts to cut out even the hallucinations of Dargo, John, and Aaron, and mm-hmm. just have the episode be the foursome, because then it preserves the suspense of what happened. What happened to them? They're trying to find them. They're searching for them, and oh, we don't have time for this, and all that kind of stuff. If we had begun in the episode with the question of what happened to them, it could have worked as a season premiere, I think, because it would have preserved some dramatic tension.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would have been hard to interest people into the show if all of a sudden we're starting without three of our main characters.
Yeah, and I agree, and I think that's probably where the lack of, again, I can't think of a better word than guts, comes from in not telling the story that way.
Yeah.
Because the season premiere does more than one job. It doesn't just finish a story, it also hooks in an audience. So I agree with you there.
Yeah, I think this should have been a Kill Your Darlings. It's like, yeah, it's a great idea. You didn't find a place to make it work. And maybe they would have if they'd, you know, saved it for even further down the line. But yeah, this just kind of it's just kind of like, let's stop and listen to a story that has no stakes.
Speaking of the hollow, I'm gonna call them the holograms. I don't know. I like the scene between Zahn and I guess what I am going to call Hollow John. you know, in the jail cell where Zahn talks about how she got her strength from the crew, and then he tells her that she isn't alone because she has Rigel and Tiana. But I'm like, okay, he's technically not wrong, but she's got a self-serving slug and a bratty teenager. I mean, that's pretty dire to me. I mean, it turns out they're in a corner and they're great, but at the time I'm like, yeah, that's not a lot.
Yeah. I love them stepping up. So let's talk about some of the character development. Let's talk about some of the bits mm-hmm. with our characters. So let's talk about Zahn.
The thing I really love, like, Dark Zahn. I love unhinged, crazy, like, Zahn, and we get a ton of that yep, year. and I just love how, like, Josh, I think you touched on the bit with Hollow Dargo. I love that scene. The performances were amazing, but what I really loved about that was Dargo was a hallucination, so it's not really Dargo that gave her strength. She gave herself strength. And yeah. That is my heart, man, my freaking heart. as we also touched on, Virginia Hay, amazing performance here. Amazing.
I did love getting a window into just the constant weight of guilt that she carries around with her all the time. And that was part of my frustration, is that there wasn't a resolution or catharsis to that emotional expression in this episode.
Yeah.
But even getting to experience it was a treat, you know? And the way that she was so ready to be like, I'm guilty. I did it. I crushed his throat with my bare hands.
Yeah. And, the sacrifice play. Yeah.
And I got to imagine that she was probably thinking about any number of other times that she actually did crush somebody's throat with her bare hands. Like, just, it was an opportunity for her to engage in penance, you know, and it's delicious.
I think what I would have liked is sort of to use the sort of legal thing. We already have a legal setup. It feels a bit like the characters are the hallucinations are playing defense. I would have liked to see, like, the prosecution. Like, whether it was like a vision of herself, you know, laying all the things out that the other characters are responding to.
Oh, that would have been so much more gripping. Wow.
Yeah.
Or some figure from her past, It would have been an interesting role for Maldus. But or like, you know, the guy that she actually did kill.
That's a freaking great idea, Sarah. Really holy crap. Idea,
yeah. Yeah, if it had been like there was one trial of Zahn going on here and one trial of Zahn going on in her mind, you know, with the things, instead of just like the sense of guilt that she has, if we actually got to see what she has, see that guilt embodied, see what that guilt is, you know, if we had had a bit of, if this had been kind of Zahn's version of the way we weren't. Mm-hmm. You know, when Aaron had to come to grips with who she had been.
Yeah.
I think Zahn is doing that, but we're only hearing the defense. We're only hearing, no, you're good. You do the good things and you have the strength. We're not, which is lovely. And I love that scene with Dargo, but I kind of feel like it's responding to something that we aren't seeing.
Yep. It's just off screen. It's over there with the civil rights allegory and the world building.
Exactly.
Yeah. Then we could, like, it would have been really interesting to have something that was like, you know, that mirrored the legal thing, because like, that's the thing that legal plot lines actually let you do, is have a kind of morality play, have a kind of adversarial debate over the truth.
It's also I feel like very easy for the subject or the protagonist of, if it's not a legal show, like it was not like a legal procedural, and they just do the court episode of whatever, it's very easy for whoever is on trial to become an object in their own story. And when they gagged Zahn, I was like so worried that that's what was happening. That we were losing Zahn in Zahn's story. But to your points, are they kept up with the hallucinations in her cell, and so we still got some good meaty Zahn character, and so that was another positive mark. I feel like I need to like make up for not enjoying this episode very much.
No, I mean we're as always, the caveat is we know that they are laying track while the train is running, and we know that we are Monday morning quarterbacking.
Yeah.
We're doing it, you know, we get enjoyment out of it, and not because we think we could have done a better job. You know, because we, even if we were in their position, we wouldn't have infinite time and resources.
Sure.
I wouldn't have watched the thing like four times or probably in my lifetime, because this is usually one I skip on a rewatch, but I've watched it a couple of times and like, yeah, so like we're doing a bit of a story autopsy.
It's an autopsy. I was just about to say that.
Right.
Yeah, because that's how we learn sort of the interesting things about story.
Yeah,
and I think it is really interesting that this was a Frankenstein beast that just never came, you know, the undead darlings that never quite, you know.
Do you know what?
I also
still better than Jeremiah Crichton.
Well, that's the thing. I also want to make clear that I didn't hate it. I really didn't hate it at all. I Josh. I just wish it was better. Like, I just wanted it to do so much more than it actually does. But it's I mean, I'd rate it like a 4 out of 10, which isn't great, but it's not a 2 either. And before I forget, just quickly, the thing with the sunburn or the moon burn, it seemed like they were setting that up to be, you know, the resolution that was going to save Zahn and prove her innocence, and I sort of rolled my eyes at it, because as soon as it's brought up, I'm like, oh yeah, there it is, there's the thing that's gonna sow the seeds of doubt in the court. And I actually would have preferred they did that than what they actually did.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And even though that wasn't great,
or you know, play the recording of the guy going, haha, I am so evil on an open top.
Which is also where I thought they were going.
Where they actually, after they have gone, I am so evil, then they take the calm badge off her.
Right.
So they're aware that there's a compact.
Do you know what? I think it just... Pilot,
why didn't you just hit record?
Okay, I think it's a 3 now, not a 4. The more we're talking about it, the more I'm just like, ugh.
Well, it is...
In the courtroom, she calls him up onto the witness stand, and she says, you know, you have to tell the truth, right? And you're not behind any of this, right? And it was just a coincidence, right? And then they don't do anything with that language thing at all. She sets a piece of wood on fire.
Yep. It's like... Maybe. Yeah.
And where was Zahn's photogasm? Like, all that was happening behind her, she should have been blasted out of her mouth.
Oh my God, I didn't think about that.
Maybe it's the wrong kind of lights.
It must be the wrong kind of lights, sorry. That's the only explanation.
The thing is, I didn't even know what the hell that was. And I guarantee you they're not going to explain it. What was that?
No, they didn't take that time to... It was something that Moya was doing, clearly, but they didn't actually explain what it was.
Like, they should have been doing that, and Zahn should have been like, whoa!
Well, she was gagged, like, rolling around on the ground.
But then it's even kinkier, Sarah.
Gagged her.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't think we needed photogasms on top of everything else in this soup.
On top of all of this. Jack.
I'm having weird imagery in my head now. Gags. I could have let that go, Ross. I'm going to have a laughing fit that's not going to stop for 20 minutes. So
we're back. Everybody.
Well, I have told you that this is known as the one American's trip through Australia's BDSM scene. So
yeah.
And you ain't seen nothing yet.
Dun, dun, baby. All right, no, sorry. So yeah, Zahn was a patsy the whole time. She was a patsy.
Yeah, which obvious late stalker sure. Lady was obvious.
Yeah.
We got very another obvious. Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like it just so many and too many ideas. Not enough, I don't know, structure.
Not enough at all.
It's one episode where I'm just like, can you guys just take this back and do it again? You can do so much better. You've done so much better. Take it back and do it again. But obviously that's not going to happen. But you know what I mean? Like, it's all the ingredients were there for something great. And then they just didn't. You know what? I think I enjoyed this episode a lot less than I thought I did. The more we talk about it, I'm just like,
okay, let's talk about what I think you probably did enjoy. Let's talk about Rigel and Tiana's bits.
That was cute. Rigel, I loved, this is just a little tidbit, but I loved when he's sitting in the cell with Zahn and he holds her hand. I thought that was so sweet. That was,
Jack, if you didn't mention that, I was going to mention that.
It's so beautiful. I love that.
Yeah,
it's a lovely little moment. And how quickly he takes his hand back and is like,
Yeah. So he's still Rigel, but you know, our little boy's growing up.
He cares. He does. He
volunteered to be defense. Like, he and Chiana both said, I will at the same time.
Yeah. Well, that was right before he knew about the whole execution thing, though, like that he would be executed too. But I don't know. I liked the sort of bumbling buddy cop Tweedledee and Tweedledum sort of vibe between them, and just the fact that the both of them used their strengths to get shit done, you know, to achieve the goal. Like, you know, Rigel was scheming, Tiana used her cunning and her sexuality, she often does, which is not a bad thing at all, of course. And yeah, I really enjoyed them. Really, really enjoyed them.
Mm-hmm. Same. I think they might have been my favorite part of this episode, including the amazing performance from Virginia Hay. But like watching Tiana and Rigel, they were the closest to their arc actually landing. Because watching them actually struggle to like I was saying earlier, to tap into other strengths. And I appreciated, you know, both times that Gianna and Rigel like called out, you know, were speaking for the writers almost to the camera, and Gianna's like, finally we get to play to our strengths. And Rigel's like, hang on, this is ridiculous. We're not lawyers. You know, like, those are good like meta moments that come very naturally to those two characters, but those their journey this episode was a lot of fun.
And Chiana on speed is hilarious.
That was, yes, I've literally got in my notes here. It's so Rigel just gave her a bunch of amphetamine.
Yes,
pretty much.
Yeah, and she took them all. Yeah, that was great. You took all, and three, the helium fart in the courtroom. That just tickled me. I love that. That was funny.
They did extend that as long as they possibly could. They were made really trying to get out of that one.
It did start to feel like a Family Guy joke towards the end, but
was probably indicative of the struggles that they were having with this episode, was how long they made that fart joke.
I think that it's, you know, it builds on, you know, it's part of Chiana's arc, even if we're going several steps back to where she was, you know, from in Family Ties, she, you know, she was wanting to sort of thank John, even though it wasn't in an appropriate way. And then she found her appropriate way to thank everybody with the dinner. And, you know, and now the sort of stepping up for Zahn, when Zahn has kind of been kind of shitty to them, being kind of condescending. They're all kind of annoying to each other. But, you know, I think that it's really good to see Chiana step up. And she stepped up differently than Rigel, because she knew what was at stake. She was there for the, you know, for the whole thing with the bad the, you know, entirely useless defense attorney.
Mm-hmm. Who also just kind of came and went this episode.
Yeah.
Little impact.
Yeah.
And then we have the bartender who is like Deus Ex bartender.
Yeah. Somebody give that guy a big tip.
Also, that bar reminded me of like the cantina from Star Wars. It really did.
It was a hive of scum and villainy.
It was Thank God It's Friday Again's bar. Which I don't.
I
really hate that I didn't like this, but it looked like the same damn set that they didn't really do much different.
Oh, okay. That went over my head. I forgot.
Pulled me out of the episode a little bit, and like I said, I don't enjoy that. That was my reaction to that. I want to just watch TV. What have you done to me?
Yeah, I didn't know. It was that whoosh, straight over my head.
It just registered to me as like standard, you know, standard issue bar.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's one of these on every planet in every sci-fi thing ever made. A scum of hive and villainy, with really, really helpful bartenders.
Like the guy had a copy of the Constitution behind the bar.
I mean, on this planet, it seems like, I bet there's probably a copy of that thing everywhere. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Okay, it's not a 3 anymore. It's a 2. The more I think about it, I'm just like, no, it wasn't good.
John,
but I did
go ahead, mm-hmm. go ahead.
I was just gonna say, Chiana and Rigel, I loved that the writers still kept them recognizable. They didn't start doing this heroic stuff that just wasn't them, because you often find that happening in these kinds of stories where like the sort of the unsuspecting hero, you know, like they become not themselves. But I didn't get that from this at all.
Yeah, they stretched. They didn't like
suddenly
grow new limbs.
Exactly. Yeah. But Josh, what were you gonna say, sir?
Oh, I was just gonna just comment on the bartender. Who was the actor who played the bartender? Because he looked really familiar.
I will find it for you.
But really? Just the yeah, he looked really familiar to me. Just like the whole social revolution that was happening just off stage. That at the very end, and when we got back to our framing device at the very end, John directly asked Zahn, "So what happened with all of that?" And she was like, "Oh, who even knows?" And I was like, "What?"
Yeah, I'm always I watch this show, I'm always on the lookout for Australian actors that I recognize, and there's been a couple along the way, not a ton, but a couple.
His name is Jeremy Callaghan. And he's known for.
Was he in Xena?
He's been in a bunch of stuff. Yeah, he's been in Xena. He was Pompey.
He was Pompey in Xena.
For four yeah. episodes.
It was a brilliant story arc, also. Anyways.
I haven't seen Xena or Hercules for a very, very long, long time. Very long, long time.
I saw some of it, but not. Not enough to not a regular enough viewer to be able to pick out.
Sara,
actually,
sometimes you recommend to me that I ought to watch Babylon 5. I'm going to return the energy to you and recommend that you ought to watch Xena. Yeah.
Okay. I just have so much associated with Hercules and.
Don't bother with Hercules. It's terrible. And also, Kevin Sorbo was just an awful person.
Yeah, yeah. Lucy Lawless agrees with you. Like,
I love that she calls him Peanut. She calls him Peanut. It's great.
Yeah.
I love that stuff when I was a kid.
Same.
I think I was also kind of a purist when it was, you know, I was a little pretentious. Mythology geek when it was airing. And I would have been, and then I was just kind of like, no, that's not right, which is not the point, but you know, teenage Sara didn't understand that wasn't the point.
The number of things teenage Josh didn't understand.
Yes. I think you were a more receptive age for Xena when it was airing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought it was cool. I wasn't thinking much about it.
Pretty lady likes pretty lady.
And just like swords and monsters and gods and everything. I thought that was just awesome. I wasn't really thinking about the validity or the the text and all that. I just
yeah.
I rolled my eyes during the sexy scenes. I was like, get back to the action.
No, I didn't do that. You're much more innocent than I was, Josh.
Well, you know, it's a classic of sapphic, literature. So I really should.
It's a classic.
Yes.
A classic.
It sounds like a disease.
It does.
The king of the dad joke returns to claim his throne.
I did finally watch something that the other Sara had been recommending to me over and over and over again. So I watched Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and she was very excited for my opinion, and it is very, very good.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, it's absolutely excellent. And there is a character in there who is very, very Josh.
Mm. That's Sara of the YouTube channel 5x5 Takes for all of our viewers and listeners.
Yes.
Yes.
So there's two characters named Josh in the story, but neither of them, the character that is you is the boss character.
Wow.
Whose name is Daryl.
I should check it out.
Yes. Highly recommend.
Mm-hmm.
We are now away from talking about Farscape because
we are.
There is so little in this episode to talk about, but we are so happy to be talking to each other.
Yes. It's been a while. And I've pretty much exhausted my notes here.
So yeah, we have just kind of gone, well...
It happened.
It happened. There were ideas that didn't come together.
Story plot.
And I liked it a little more before this conversation. Not a lot more, but a little more.
Sorry
about that, man.
There's still stuff to enjoy there.
There is.
I always enjoy, you know, Rigel and Shiana, the law firm of Sparky and Pip.
And that was good.
Yeah. I liked it. Yeah.
And
the overall production design was great. Some great performances. Just wish it did more. Just great ideas that just fizzled rather than boomed.
Ultimately, really structure is important, and they never got around to getting the structure. Yeah, the set design is neat. Everything production-wise is neat.
Yeah, all of it, really.
The costumes are interestingly weird. Like, there's Big Hat Lady, but there's also, like, the sort of condom cap thing that everybody is wearing.
Oh, God.
And apparently they
I would have called it a thimble, but anyway. I like yours much better.
I was trying to figure out the whole way, what does that weird hat remind me of? And
not a lipstick, not, you know.
And then the idea just popped up in her head.
Yes. Yes, it did. It rather arose of its own accord.
It did, yeah. It stood tall.
We really are back. My God.
Yeah. The red and black is always an interesting combination. And it's that's the and another thing that's like red, white, and black are the peacekeeper colors. This is not a peacekeeper colony.
No.
Are you gonna pull out the red and black? And the it's that stark kind of, it's very, very reminiscent of peacekeeper design.
Mm.
But then it has nothing to do with peacekeepers.
Sabation. Yeah.
Yeah. Sabation. Well, they look like you, except without the weird face paint.
Mm-hmm. Except they have better makeup remover.
And don't get burned by the moon.
Because of blue eyes. I liked that. That was a very Farscapian alien thing. The blue-eyed people.
Yeah,
that was good.
Yeah,
wasn't it moon burn as well? That there was two moons and they were red and yeah,
yeah,
cool. Yeah.
Great, good for you, Farscape.
Yeah, look, really. As we neat said before, ideas. There are lots of interesting. Yeah,
I always have to admire ambition. Like if you try, you just got to admire that. Yeah. Even if it doesn't always work out, I got to admire it.
Yeah, there are definitely interesting ingredients in this weird stew.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then the last thing I think we'll touch on is well, you wanted John to be doing less John McClaning.
Yeah, yeah, and I got it. I got it. It's
so this is your fault.
What's that?
Be careful what you wish for.
You know that Thanos meme? What did you get? And what did it cost? Everything.
No, but
that's how I feel right now.
As much as it's entirely kind of pointless and doesn't work, I kind of like his attempt to be like Counselor Van here again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It didn't appear to. You know, it appeared, well, it seemed to help her in some way. We just didn't see any of what their conversation was.
they did a really good, they leaned really well into John and Zahn's relationship in a way that they really haven't in quite a while. Yeah. It was very like middle of season one.
Yeah.
I liked it. I really like their thank you for having compassion with me. Thank you for having, like that last moment that together was lovely.
That was good. That was pretty good.
Mm.
It just is another ingredient in this weird stew that lacks any structure. So yes, the thing, the lesson we have learned, much as we have learned it, much as we had to learn it from Picard season three or season two, I should say, is structure is important. No matter how many interesting ingredients you have, if you don't have structure, it can kind of go.
Yeah.
I know Josh disagrees with
me on that. I know what you're doing. I'm not going
to do it. And I'm just going to back away slowly. But nothing to do with that.
So, yeah. With Josh not taking the bait, we should probably move on to favorite parts.
Favorite part. My favorite part. I really want to say the courtroom fart, but no, that would be a runner-up.
Just say it if that's your favorite part. That's okay.
No, that's up there. That's a very, very close second to the scene between Zahn and Holo Dargo. Again, just because it's, yes, she's seeing Dargo and hear his voice and everything, but really she finds her own strength through a hallucination, but still she finds her own strength, and I love that.
So the scene with Zahn and Holo Dargo is my runner-up, because I would just like to hire Anthony Simcoe in Dargo makeup to give me positive affirmations.
Amen, brother.
In that soft, silky, tentacled voice of his. But for me, my favorite part was the closing scene with John and Zahn. That was the cherry on top of this soup that I really enjoyed.
So you both picked parts that were definitely my favorites, because I didn't just find the Dargo scene reassuring. It's fucking hot.
I own that shit. Yes.
If any persons out there are wondering what to do to turn on some person in your life, try being really affirming like that, in that really confident voice. I think you may find you have a lot of success.
Yes. You know, I think people. I'm a little turned on now.
Sorry, yes, sorry. I shall win you over to my Dargo is hot fan club. Tentacle Zaddy is where it's at sometimes.
He's not ready for that. Sorry, he's not ready for that.
Yeah, let's like ease into this. I'm not
sure I am, but I just had to say it because
you walk him to the edge before you push him off.
You got me.
That just kind of came out on its own.
That's quite all right. We know I'm not adverse to that.
Yeah, and I also am very fond of compassion scene. I think that's absolutely lovely. But since you two chose those moments, I'm going to choose the little handhold that gets whipped away when someone sees.
Beautiful.
Because I think that is just kind of precious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. I love that one too.
Okay. So we are done with Lawyer Planet Fox 2.
And let us never speak of it again.
Oops, All Lawyers is behind us. So moving on, the next episode is called Out of Their Minds.
Oh, good.
And we shall be joined by Ren.
Oh, cool.
For both the reaction, hopefully, and definitely for the discussion.
Is that Ren the Barbarian, the YouTuber?
That is indeed Ren the Barbarian, the YouTuber. Yes.
I was waiting for that line, Josh, and you didn't disappoint.
I'm trying to be supportive, you know?
And everyone should check out their recent video on Journey to Babel.
Oh, so good.
Very, very good. One of my favorite Star Trek episodes.
Also so good.
Yeah. And then following that, so after Out of Their Minds, we have My Three Crichtons.
Oh.
So I've asked you for predictions for Out of Their Minds before. Do you have any predictions for My Three Crichtons?
I think Crichton's going, he's going to be hit with some beam that like splits him into three. Like, is it the replacement, the Buffy episode with the two mm-hmm. Xanders? Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what we're going to get.
Daddy's home.
Oh, okay.
By which you okay. mean?
Mr. Crichton is coming.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Interesting possibilities. Okay, following that, we have a three-episode arc called Look at the Princess.
Oh, what? That's cool.
I've had some questions about this, and I think we will do, they are three separate chapters of the same story. So okay. I think we will do three different episodes on them.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, trying to discuss three episodes in one sitting probably get a bit long and a little muddled, and yeah,
probably we'll have to split it up. Each one on a cliffhanger, though.
That's actually not a bad idea.
I think I'm going to try and have us a guest for one of them. We'll see if that works out. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we will definitely try and do a reaction to at least one of them, because there was a speech that I think folks would love to see your response to.
Okay.
So we'll see cool. if that works out. So that I'm is
down.
So we have an exciting five episodes coming up, is what I'm hearing.
Yes. Yes. We have okay. some. Awesome. Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So yes. Join us in 2 weeks for Out of Their Minds. And if you are a mm-hmm. Patreon viewer, you will get to see how the guys react to Out of Their Minds. We haven't had any new patrons in a while, and we love new patrons. We love our patrons in general. We really appreciate you, and mm-hmm. And we show our appreciation by recording these reaction videos sometimes,
and through continuous affirming eye contact.
It's like he's peering into my soul. You're so exposed and vulnerable, Josh.
You are good and strong. You are enough.
You are our patrons.
Yes. We believe in you.
We do. Go and eat that cupcake. You deserve it.
We are none of us Anthony Simcoe.
No.
Josh might be the closest. I wish it was,
but yeah.
I'm no Anthony Simcoe.
So tell the folks how they can find you, Jack.
You can find me on Twitter at LackOfSurprise1. That's all one word with a number one at the end. You can find me over on Instagram at Jack Cram, lowercase, one word. And you can find me over on our Discord server. Josh, what about you, sir?
You can find me over on Instagram at Josh Gosden, all lowercase, all one word. And you can also find me wherever there's injustice in the world.
Sarah, my love.
I have rebranded my channel. So I am now the Fat Culture Critic. Woo! And on Twitter, you can find me under that or Blue Stockin' Sarah. And I recently did a video. It took me all of January to get to it, but I did a video talking about some of the fat representation that we saw in 2022 that didn't suck. Mm-hmm. I sort of started at the doesn't suck bar and got to some good representation, got to talk a little bit about This Is Us and a little bit about A League of Their Own and also a bit about RuPaul's Drag Race.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it was fun to do a bit of a quick roundup. Unfortunately, the algorithm being what it is, it didn't do too well. I had some audio issues, but mostly just I was talking about something positive and the algorithm doesn't like positivity.
So in other words, if you are listening to our voices right now, go and check it out and boost that shit up.
Yeah. What is it? And yes, hopefully having more videos coming.
Woo!
Yay!
I'm proud of you regardless because you are strong. Aww. You are invincible.
Heartache to heartache, we stand.
Well, I was going with I am strong. I am invincible.
I am woman. I am
woman. But that works too, Josh. It all works. Heartache to heartache, we stand. Okay. I'm calm. I'm good.
And there it is, folks. We needed some Jackson.
Bye-bye.
So this has been the Return of the Jack. Return of the Jack. Return of the Jack.
Oh, boy.
And they'll fade out on that.
No, freeze frame on that.
Or should we do this? Freeze frame faces.
Josh, you actually look frozen. It's great.
If there's one thing I can do, it's pretend to be a Muppet.
I am a Muppet.
Are you a very manly Muppet?
I'm a Muppet of a man.
I like that. I'm a Muppet of a man. Have
you seen the 2000 and something, the Muppet movie with Jason Segel?
Mm-hmm.
I have not. I didn't know there was one.
There's a song. Am I a man? Am I a Muppet? If I'm a Muppet, I'm a very manly Muppet.
Oh, okay. Okay.
If I'm a man, I'm a Muppet of a man. As usual, you missed the reference.
Josh looks frozen again.
I'm not. I'm just listening to you all.
Yeah. So join us in 2 weeks. We will hopefully be back to regularly scheduling these episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry that sometimes we have to take a break, but that's the way things are.
Life.
Thankfully nobody caught COVID this time.
Thankfully. Touch wood.
Yeah. So that's
all the wood.
Well, this is the podcast to do that. And on that note, it's probably time we say goodbye.
Okay. How do we do the outro again?
We just say bye, folks.
Bye.
Okay.
Yeah, I just kind of burped and almost vomited. Never mind.
Been there,
cheers. Oh, shit. We're recording this. Whoops.
Yeah, but I don't have to use that as the
end. I mean, you could. I don't care. Believe me, no shame, darling. No shame.
I was more hoping for the, it's good to be back.
Almost vomited.
Hey. Editor's choice, right?
Yeah.
Almost, I did.
Authentically us.
It's also the risky fart. Yeah. You ever had a risky fart? Yeah.
What's going to happen?
What are we doing?
Apparently, we are all Rigel.
We're yes.
Yes. Freaking Rigel, man. Rigel.
Now in court?
That was a good scene.